John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, good morning on this happy Valentine's Day. Hope everybody's having a happy Valentine's Day. Good exchange of cards and presents and you name it. It's always going to be a good day when it's Valentine's Day. So think that everybody have a good night tonight, good dinners and all those different things. And so, Curtis Rogers, what do you got going for Valentine's Day?
What do I got going tonight? I don't have anything going on. Tomorrow I do, but we got the Dragons opener tomorrow as well. Their home opener, I should say.
Right.
But, yeah, it's going to be a fun weekend here in Seattle. And, you know, the Mariners, they're getting going down in spring training. Their games kick off not this weekend, but next weekend. So, I mean, it's still a busy time, even though it kind of feels like the sports calendar may be crawling to a little bit of a halt. But we got it going on, John.
We have, definitely do. And we got it going on with the five biggest stories of the day. The top five brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
Yeah, I think they said they're opening up more seating, too. So I think it's going to be close to 30,000 maybe. But, you know, I've never been to a Seahawks game, but I've watched them on TV. You know, I just know how Seattle is about their football and how they, the passionate they are for their football. So, you know, we're excited to open up Saturday at home get a win.
Silvers, who looks like he is going to be able to play, and the game is going to be at 2 o'clock going against the Tampa Bay Vipers home opener, more than 30,000 people expected. Silvers, of course, had that ankle injury he suffered last week, is now listed as probable. Kaysen Williams, who got the quad, he's out. Mohamed Cisse, questionable with a groin injury. You'll also be able to hear Joel Klatt at 10:30. He's going to be on the broadcast on Fox. He'll be joining us at 10:30 to talk about the start of the XFL season, also talk about what's going on. It's his thoughts on this team, his thoughts on where things are. But overall, team is in pretty good shape. Yeah, they have an injury in the offensive line. That did hurt. But overall, I think right now you can see that as long as they don't make the mistakes, they should be in good shape. Tampa Bay had four turnovers last week, and so they come in as underdogs, but I think at this stage, you know, good chance that the Dragons can try to get their first win. Again, they played pretty well last week, and I thought Silvers did some really good things, but now it's a matter how can they get the victory and get going. And of course, it's going to be a home opener. It's going to be fun to see where this team is going to go and the fan reaction to the first game for the Seattle Dragons.
Number two.
Mitch had a procedure called a microdiscectomy, which is a little bit different, and I guess they're two potential, I guess, descriptions of a discectomy and a discectomy. This is the microdiscectomy. I'm not a doctor, but it's just a small repair of a vertebrae, and we don't have a timeline for his return. He's in the hospital recovering right now. We believe the procedure went well. Seems to be in pretty good spirits, I think, as you probably saw. And, you know, we're expecting that he will be here in camp, though we don't have a timeline for that either.
That's Jerry DePoto, general manager of the Mariners, talking about the second operation on Mitch Haniger, and this one was on his back and has happened now in the last 3 weeks. Timetable was supposed to be 6 to 8 weeks after the initial procedure, but now it looks like it's going to be longer. There's no time, so he's had core surgery, he's had back surgery, and really you kind of wonder, is he going to be able to play at all this year? That's a big blow for this team because, again, he's a guy that they really need, one of the all-star guys, an outfielder that plays right field and plays it so well, is a good hitter, but boy, that injury last year really set things back for him, set things back for the team, and so the competition begins with Jake Fraley, Brandon Bishop, and Carlos Gonzalez, who was added this week, to try to see who is going to be in right field while they wait to find out the timeline and the recovery time for Mitch Haniger. So Mitch Haniger getting a second operation, you know, not good news, and you can even hear how down Jerry DePoto sounded as he made the announcement on this, but this team, you know, they need a Mitch Haniger, but right now they don't have him.
Number three.
I'm looking at Greg Olsen, and he got out of Carolina because you want to compete, right? You want to compete for a Super Bowl. You want to get to that right spot. Out of these three teams, I mean, Washington is last. My first choice will be Seattle just because I'm with Russell Wilson.
Boy.
I'll have a chance to be able to compete for a championship and division titles. I would probably choose Seattle, and then my next one would be Buffalo.
And I'll tell you what, whoever ends up paying him his new contract, you're getting one of the high character guys.
Absolutely.
If you want a guy in the locker room who's a pro's pro, Greg Olsen is that type.
Well, it looks like Greg Olsen is going to make his decision tomorrow which team he's going to go to. And I'm not sure which, you know, he'll be doing one of the broadcasts this weekend. But Greg Olsen is talking to Seattle, Buffalo, and Washington. And you heard the voice of James Jones of the NFL Network talking about Olsen and what he can mean to whatever team he goes to. And I think right now, Seattle does have the favorite slot. Again, I think the price is going to be about $5 to $5.2 million a year, one-year, two-year deal. But again, you figure he's going to play 1 year most likely. He's also talking to TV. You know, he's on the Fox broadcast on the XFL. And so, you know, Greg Olsen, I think he could be needed because, again, you know, he's out there. He's a guy that had 52 catches last year, still has some football left in him, and it looks like he has a desire to play football. We'll see what decision he makes, and hopefully he'll make that decision tomorrow.
Number four.
Brett Daniels is off. USC gets it. USC is going to hand the Washington Huskies their seventh straight loss.
This continues to get worse and worse and worse. Huskies losing their seventh straight game, 62-56 to USC. They led by 5 points and a half in the typical fashion they've been. They just can't finish very well. And they went about 8 minutes, almost 8 minutes in the second half without a field goal. Jaden Daniels is now coming off the bench. He led all scorers with 19 points. Isaiah Stewart came in with a double-double, 13 points and 11 rebounds. But this disastrous season continues, and they stay on the road. They're going to be playing UCLA. That's going to be at 7 p.m. on ESPN2 on Saturday. But can it be eight in a row? Because now this team has a losing record. You know, they're 12-13, and really, things have just totally fallen apart. Seven straight losses, and then on top of everything else, you know, they've now lost 11 out of the last 13 games. The Huskies in bad shape in the Pac-12.
Number five.
If you were Eric Bieniemy, would you take stay as a Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator or take the head coaching job at Colorado, which is rumored to be possibly offered to him?
Well, it should be offered to him. He played there. He was a star player there. Look, I don't want to tell somebody what they should or shouldn't do. If you want to take a job, then take the job at your alma mater. But if you want to be a head coach in the NFL, then prove it again. Show them that they made a mistake. Somebody should have hired you.
That's Dan Patrick talking about Eric Bieniemy, and he's having conversations with Colorado about the head coaching job that was opened up when Mel Tucker went to Michigan State. Adam Schefter is reporting that, you know, Bieniemy is doing his due diligence on possibly going back to his alma mater. And I think really, if he gets a chance, it's almost a better situation because, you know, if you wait for the NFL, you don't know if you're going to get one of those jobs next year. You don't know what job is going to open. In this case, I think, you know, you get some coaching experience, and then a couple years down the line, maybe you go back and you go into the NFL, which I think he wants to be an NFL head coach. But I think at the moment, he would be wise if they make the offer to work it out with Colorado, get into the Pac-12, go back to his alma mater. Because the one thing is that, sure, he is a hot coaching candidate, but he's also one that doesn't call plays. I mean, you know, and it's not because he can't. It's because Andy Reid calls all the plays. And so, you know, that Andy Reid coaching tree is very rich and very good, and I think he can be a good head coach. But I think the big thing is it's time for Eric to be a head coach. I think he very well should look and maybe take the job if they offer it at Colorado. Hey, you can listen to the show on the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we're going to talk about, you know, who on the defensive line. They have five defensive linemen up. Who's more likely to return? Could it be Jaron Reed, Jadeveon Clowney, or who else? That's going to be on further review. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Okay, so we go into further review, and of course, the big question marks and the big things have to go on the defensive line. That's where they have five unrestricted free agents, and of course, two big names, Jadeveon Clowney and also Jaron Reed. You know, they got Quentin Jefferson up, Al Woods is up, and so they got to make decisions on who gets to come back. And I think everybody kind of agrees right now who they want more than anything else is getting Jadeveon Clowney. They'd love to be able to get Jaron Reed done, but of course, Jaron Reed may be asking for more than $10 million, and if that's the case, that may be a little bit too pricey. In the case of Clowney, I mean, he's going to be one of the top defensive free agents out there. He's going to be unrestricted, and I know on Thursday, on Tom, Jake, and Stacey, they discussed who's more likely to return, Jaron Reed or Jadeveon Clowney.
Who's more likely to be re-signed, Jaron Reed or Jadeveon Clowney?
out of those two guys, the guy that I really think is most likely to sign back with the Seahawks is Clowney. The reason why I say that is, one, Clowney is, yes, he's going to be more money, but I think the Seahawks are willing to spend that money. They understand that he's going to be in that $20 million mark. How high? That is a question, right? And that part of it is going to be really interesting to see how big Clowney's market influxes, right? But I do think that there is some part in him that says that he does want to stay here in Seattle, that he really likes it. However, on the flip side, for Jaron Reed, I know the Seahawks aren't going to want to spend big-time, top-dollar defensive tackle money on Jaron Reed, and that's exactly what Jaron Reed is going after. He does not care whether it's with the Seahawks or with somebody else, and I think that he's made that very, very clear through tweets that he's put out over the offseason. Jaron Reed is looking to get paid, and Clowney is looking to get paid, but I also think that there is some part of him that says, I want to play for a Super Bowl contender. I loved my time in Seattle. So for that reason, I think that Clowney is much more likely to be re-signed by the Seahawks.
Yes, that's the thing, because you're a defensive tackle, Reed, and you're not going to get more money than Clowney, because Clowney is still going to get top dollar. But, in the case of Clowney, I think you will have to almost eliminate the 3-4 teams, because I don't think he wants to go back to linebacker. And, a couple reasons. Number one, you're going to make less money than you will as a defensive end. And then number two, I think he's just a better fit in a 4-3 defense. I mean, he was a 4-3 guy in college. He's got that long, angular body, and I think that it works better for him. He saw what happened to him in Houston. I mean, he finally, goes to 3 Pro Bowls, does a good job, but in the end, is that do you really want to go ahead and stay in a 3-4 defense? And I would say no, because what you do is that you have more problems there at defensive end. I mean, the defensive end is right now his spot, and I would have to think that one, he wants to go to a good team that'll limit some of the bad 4-3 teams. Half the league is more a 4-3 team than that. So I think that the smart thing to do is I'll figure out, okay, what winning team can he go to that would make any sense? And I'd say right now it's one where you can go ahead and just wait it out. And I would have to think that Curtis, that this team has a decent chance if they're willing to pay the top dollar to keep him.
I think so, too. I think they've got a great chance at keeping Jadeveon Clowney if they're willing to meet him at his price point. And you look at the cap room that they have, too. If they do meet him at his price point, it's not going to cripple the rest of their offseason, where they're going to be so financially hamstrung that they can't make other big moves out there. And I think it becomes almost sort of a no-brainer for Seahawks fans when they look at the Seahawks, like, yes, absolutely bring back Jadeveon Clowney, because the tape showed last year, even though the sack totals weren't there, but the tape absolutely showed that Jadeveon Clowney can alter games just by getting pressure on the quarterback, and heck, he can even drop back into coverage. He had the pick six. He also had a fumble recovery for a touchdown. This is a guy who creates havoc in more than one way, and so often we see these one-dimensional pass rushers, and Clowney is not that. He is not that at all. He has multiple dimensions to his game, and I think that's where his value is and why he is going to be able to command top dollar out in free agency, as opposed to other pass rushers like Yannick Ngakoue of the Jags, who, he's kind of one-dimensional. He's a guy who's going to get after the quarterback, but what else does he do great? Jadeveon Clowney does multiple things really well, and I think that's why he's going to get what he's going to get.
Yeah, and that's why they really need to get him signed. Now, again, the problem is that he knows he's one of the top 4 or 5 defensive players available in free agency. Chris Jones is probably considered to be the best. I mean, because again, he's a dominating defensive tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs. But then you got so many of the guys that are considered defensive ends or pass rushers, edge rushers. A lot of those guys are going to be franchised. Matthew Judon could be franchised, so he's going to be off the market. He's a linebacker with Baltimore. They very well could do the same with Eric Armstead of the San Francisco 49ers. And so that Clowney is going to be the one guy that's going to be available. But again, a lot of the 4-3 teams have already made big investments, and they're going to have a hard time putting in a $21 million defensive end. Like, for example, Kansas City, they did $20.8 million on Frank Clark, and so you have to think that they can't go ahead and jump in there as a 4-3 defense. You'd have to look over at San Francisco, and now they have Boza and they have D. Ford. They can't jump in, but you still have to worry about teams like Buffalo. Atlanta's tight against the cap. I don't know if they can afford paying $21 million. You know, Washington's going to be interested, but that's not a winning team right now, particularly with some of the moves that they just made today. And, you know, I'm sure Clowney is going to observe that. I mean, Clowney's going to be looking and saying, no, wait a second. Here's the Redskins. I know that they have a good coach in Ron Rivera, but they just cut Josh Norman. They just cut Paul Richardson. And so they're going to be a little bit more in a rebuilding mode, where if he stays here, there's no rebuilding. It's a matter of trying to ramp it up and try to go to the Super Bowl.
John, when you mentioned all of those pass rushers that are free agents this offseason or are in line for franchise tags, do you think Clowney will wait and see what they get, or is he going to be the deal that sets the market for these guys?
I think that I think he's got to sort it out first and see, you know, do you really want to go a couple of days into free agency? I mean, his agent will sort it out probably at the combine to get an idea what where he can go and what kind of price he can get. But it'd be better. I mean, the way that he worked things out with the Seahawks and all that stuff, I mean, I don't think that he's as concerned about being a market setter. Sure, he wants as much money as he possibly can, and he's in a position to do it, and he should be able to be allowed to do it. But I think that if he can get the right offer with Seattle, I mean, it may not be the trendsetter, but again, if it's going to be $21 million, $22 million, whatever it's going to be, you know, I think that he can be content with that. I mean, I think that it would save everything if he can make a decision before March 18th, but he very well might not.
Yeah, and when you look at the other candidates who are free agents this upcoming league year, do any of them have a possibility of being that market setter? Kind of like last year where C.J. Mosley set the linebacking market, and he said it's so absurdly high to where it's never been before. I think the previous high was, $14 million? He had $17 million. Bobby Wagner's like, well, I want $18 million. Do you think there's going to be anybody out there that kind of, you know, shocks us all, that the number they get is going to reset everything we think about paying defensive linemen?
Yeah, I mean, it happens every year. I mean, we'll see if that is going to be the case, but it's a possibility, because in the end, it's like free agency always is a surprise, because to get somebody done, I mean, you have to pay top dollar, and sometimes you overpay. I mean, we watched that with Mosley clearly, and so what surprise is going to be there? Who knows? We don't know, for example. But you have to figure, for the most part, the surprise will happen on defense, because that seems to be where the trend is. And, of course, will it be a defensive end? I mean, the real record setter, I think, is going to be Chris Jones, because, again, they could franchise him. But, there's going to be more franchise tags out. And we still don't know for a fact because what could happen is that if they don't have a collective bargaining agreement by in the next week, and of course I know the next Thursday is a big day because they're assembling the board, all the 11 people on the executive committee, to at least maybe put a vote up and see if they can get it done. But if not, you also have a transition tag that you can use, and so if you can use a franchise tag and a transition tag, and that would even water things down a little bit more. Now, we can't do it on Clowney because the team has an agreement with him that they will not franchise him, but that's still something that could water down the market even more. But hey, if it's free agency, you never know for sure, but it's going to be I think an interesting one. But I think right now I agree that right now Clowney has the better chance to come back than Reed, but they need to get that thing done. Hey, coming back, and of course, be sure to check out the Professor's Notes on 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, we'll talk to Joel Klatt, who's going to be in for the broadcast with the Seattle Dragons going up against Tampa Bay tomorrow. He's on the Fox broadcast. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us is Joel Klatt, who's going to be in town for the Saturday broadcast with the Seattle Dragons having their home opener going against Tampa Bay. And I'll tell you what, I know we were talking about it before coming on the air. I was really pleased with the way that everything went from several standpoints in the first week of the XFL. I thought the TV productions were sensational. I think the linkage with both Fox, ABC, ESPN worked out really well. And I thought the quality of the game was good.
Yeah, John, I could not agree more. There's a few things that stood out to me about week one. First and foremost is I think that, you know, the post-Super Bowl bump is what we expected somewhat from a rating standpoint after what the AAF did a year ago. You know, they did close to the numbers that the XFL did this year. And then I think the play on the field, like you touched on, I think it was really good. And what I think people have to realize, and I'm not saying you need to lower your expectations, but what I am saying is these teams aren't, you know, existing programs and or organizations that are bringing in just a few rookies to get acclimated. This entire team, the entire coaching staff, all eight of these teams are trying to put this together on the fly. And knowing how difficult that is, I thought that the play was very clean, putting together officials, you know, on the fly like the XFL has done. I thought it was officiated fairly well. And then I thought some of the innovations, whether it's rules and or broadcast access, were just so fan-friendly, they were transparent, and everything from that standpoint went really well. Now, I think that the challenge is to not take the dip that the AAF did a year ago. Now, financially, this league is so much stronger and more legitimate than what the AAF turned out to be a year ago. However, I think the main difference is that when you know where the games are going to be televised, and you at home know that on Saturday afternoon you're going to get an ABC game, on Saturday evening you're going to get a Fox game, and you know where to find those, I think the accessibility of the broadcasts are going to be ultimately so important for the success here in week 2, 3, 4, and so on.
No, because, again, there's a predictability to it now that you know. It's like, okay, so you know that you're going to have an 11 o'clock game if you're in Seattle. You know you're going to have a 2 o'clock game and all those games. And then the great part is, you know, with every game being broadcast, I mean, you can watch the entire league in a weekend.
No doubt. And, John, don't underestimate the power of the people out there wagering and the league leaning into that, not only getting, you know, Vegas on board to set lines and over-unders and everything, but also, you know, the fact that they want us as a broadcast crew to lean into that, not, you know, too much, but obviously we're going to touch on it. There's lines and overs on the graphic. We'll touch on it from an announcer standpoint. I think that helps as well. And everything that they've done has been really through two veins. One, how do we make the sport better? Not just different, but better in our eyes. And then two, how do we make the fans' experience better? And I think both of those things have been achieved to a large degree, at least through week one. And I think that the biggest point of that would be the access to the replay booth during replay reviews. People have loved that. And it's, and you know what I think is so interesting about it is that, John, people love what's going on, and it's generally the same type of calls being made. So people are not upset at the officiating. They're upset at the lack of transparency, and they're frustrated with the fact that they don't seem to understand how this process works. So being taken behind the curtain, I think, has been a revelation for all football fans and something that I'm certain the other leagues will be talking about, whether they're college or in the NFL. Now, whether we'll get the unprecedented access in other spots remains to be seen. But I will tell you that I felt like that was one of the things that the fans have talked to me about most since week one.
Yeah, because, again, I thought what was great was that, you know, first off, the NFL needed last year to get to the Sky Judge. But what you also liked about on the broadcast, you were able to see the judge up there, and it's a very calm conversation to try to make the right call. And that transparency, I think, really carried over and was good.
No doubt. And what you do is two things. I think you humanize the decision being made, and you realize that these guys are legitimately trying to get it right. They're legitimately trying to see a definitive angle. And I think that that helps the fan at home. And then you also see what I think is so great, which is the process. You know, so they kind of spell out to you what they're looking for and the way that they could either overturn or stay with the call. And so you can see it better for yourself. Now, obviously, the rules analyst like Mike Pereira has been a great bump and benefit to us at Fox, but I think it's still even better to actually hear it from the horse himself when it's the replay man, the replay booth, the Sky Judge, going through that process with the official on the field.
You bring up the odds and the gambling and that stuff. Now, how much more defined is it this week? Because you know last week with the four games that were out there, nobody had a clue who was good and who was not. How has it redefined itself this week? Because now after seeing the teams, I mean, how are the odds going compared to, say, last week where you had no idea one way or another?
Well, what I try to do is I try not to check anything until we get to game day because I candidly, I don't really care where the money is going. I just care what the line is at the end, right? You know, like when we kick it off, what is the public? What is Vegas thinking? So, I very honestly have not looked this week, and I will obviously later tonight and early tomorrow. I think that what you're going to see though is, I personally believe that you're going to see better lines being set, and then you're going to see smarter money being laid. You're going to see teams that are like, okay, they struggled defending the run, and this team is a good run team. Okay, so that's going to cause me to put money on one side or the other, so on and so forth. This team is good on the road. This team is not good on the road, so on and so forth. So I think what you're going to see is that the movement after the first line set, I think that the movement will be smarter moving forward than it certainly was week one.
What did you see of the Dragons in week one, and what are you looking forward to and seeing in the game on Saturday?
I thought that they played a really good game. In fact, I thought that they outplayed DC, the defenders, and made some mistakes. They had some turnovers. They had kind of a poor special team sequence that led to a field goal. They had a blocked punt that led to a defender's touchdown. You know, this is a game where I looked at them and I thought to myself, I thought that they were the better team on the field, and it didn't show up on the scoreboard. I think Silvers, who is mostly an air raid style quarterback, right? If you ask him where is he in his, you know, most comfortable state, he would say in the Neil Brown Troy air raid system that goes back all the way to Mike Leach and Hal Mummy. It's very different than how he's being taught right now. So he's learning a little bit different style of quarterback play. If the air raid is like true artistry from a quarterback and there's not a lot of restraints and there's a lot of creativity afforded him, you know, what he's being asked to do now, there's a lot more structure and there's a lot more timing, and you're being asked to hold the timing of the offense within your feet and work from under center a little bit more. So what I believe you're going to see is that he's going to progress and get better and better and better. He made a couple of mistakes. They unfortunately were giant mistakes, in particular the pick six. So what I see for Seattle is that their offense is going to continue to get better. I like their run game. They're a little banged up on the offensive line, which could be a concern. But then ultimately, I think that that defense in the front seven, which they're very high on, is something that's going to need to carry them a bit in this game. And Tampa, in a very simple, similar vein, John, outplayed New York to a big degree, to a large degree, and they turned the ball over four times, and they stunk in the red zone, and they end up losing the game. So regardless of what level of football or what league you play in, you know, the same truths are going to be true, which is that you got to take care of the football, you got to score when you have your opportunity, and each of these teams struggled in those areas week one.
I know I host the Jim Zorn show on Mondays at 11 o'clock, and one of the things that he was kind of caught cold with was that, you know, the microphone that he had on himself and how the play calls were coming out, which I loved, but it could. How do you see the coaches adjusting to that? Because now it's just so open because, I mean, you know, because you did it during the broadcast. It's like, okay, you know the formations, and when they call the play, you know where the play is going to go.
Yeah, and I think offense is still language, and it's still learning a new language. And so I think what you're seeing is these guys, and particularly these lifers, you know, everything in this sport is about secrets. You know that. Nobody wants to give away information. No one wants to give away their secrets, how they block this concept, how they call this play, the key for the receiver on that play, so on and so forth. And so when you're hearing it, I think what it is it creates some anxiety because it's so different for those coaches. There's really no advantage being gained by that access. I mean, the broadcast is on a delay, so it's not like an advantage is being gained. I think some of these coaches are more worried about what's going to happen in the off season and during the weeks of some of that audio being broken down by staffers of opponents and seeing what advantage they can gain. But to be honest with you, I don't know what advantage they can gain. They're not going to get the calls into the defense in time. So I know that he said he was a bit surprised. I was actually surprised that he said that because it's been well known that we're going to have access to those calls. We did it in the test games. So I don't know why he said that. And even yesterday when we were talking to him, I told him directly, I was like, you know, that was a, candidly, Jim, that was a bad look. You can't say that. You knew, you know, that you were going to be live. You can't be surprised that was going to be happening.
No doubt. Of course, if you're not at the game tomorrow at 2 o'clock, you can watch the game on Fox. Joel Klatt will be doing the broadcast. And, of course, looking forward to seeing you in town. And it should be a fun day tomorrow.
Can't wait. John, always appreciate you having me on, man. Been fun, always.
And that's Joel Klatt joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. A big game tomorrow against Tampa Bay. Home opener, more than 30,000 people expected. All right, so we're going to come back and get behind the lines here and check out what's going on in the National Football League. Also, we're going to have a chance for you to get two tickets to Megadeth and Lamb of God. We'll get into that next. But, of course, it's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with a 710 Seattle Sports app.
Okay, so now here's a good one for you. So here's your chance to win two tickets to see Megadeth and Lamb of God on July 25th at the White River Amphitheater. Tickets are going to go on sale today at Ticketmaster.com. Be the fifth caller at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Fifth caller, you have a chance to win two tickets to see Megadeth. Tickets going on sale today at Ticketmaster.com. All righty, so interesting moves in Washington with the Redskins. Redskins making a surprise announcement that Josh Norman has been cut and former Seahawk Paul Richardson has been cut. And so here's Ron Rivera, and kind of interesting because, you know, Norman was drafted by the Carolina Panthers and played for Ron Rivera when he was in Carolina. So that was kind of a surprise move. I guess it had been speculated for some time that that could happen, and it sure enough did happen today. We'll see if it goes on the waiver wire, but I think that it's a move that is doing all good right now. But again, it's like you can see that the Redskins are starting to step back, and you know, I don't know. I mean, Josh Norman is a kind of a guy that does Pro Bowl talent, but things just dropped off last year to a point where they didn't have him on the field. So it's kind of be interesting to see. And I don't know, it's like what do you kind of think of the Redskins right now? Because, you know, they're trying to talk Trent Williams into coming back because, you know, he was angry at the team. And, you know, this is one that is kind of an interesting move.
Yeah, it really is. But, you know, they saved $12 million in letting go Josh Norman. And Paul Richardson, he's had, a couple of years in Washington where he hasn't been able to stay healthy. So I think the Redskins are looking at this and saying, you know what, I think we're better off without these guys. I think Washington also is at a point where they don't need, you know, a $12 million cap hit from somebody like Josh Norman who barely played this last season. I think they're kind of wiping the slate clean. I think they're getting ready for, you know, maybe a couple of years, maybe next year or the year after, where they are in play for a lot of free agents. As we know, they haven't had really any issues attracting free agents to that organization. It's getting them to play well after they do sign there. That's been their biggest issue. I look at this, though, John, from a Seahawk perspective, and maybe these are two names that are of an interest to John Schneider. Obviously, Paul Richardson with his history here in Seattle, playing, you know, the first 4 years of his career with the Seahawks, knows the system, and would probably be in line to be a possible number three wide receiver, kind of, you know, wherever his next stop is in the NFL, because he didn't really show that he could be a top flight guy in Washington. And then Josh Norman, a veteran presence in the secondary, maybe somebody who can come in and be a veteran voice for these young defensive backs here in Seattle. What do you think about the possibility of either one of those guys being of interest to the Seahawks?
I mean, marginal. You know, Paul had been here, but, you know, I know we got the $8 million contract to go to Washington, but is he really going to, I know, you know, Jaron Reed or Jaron Brown is probably not going to be back. You know, they still have David Moore. Is Richardson that much better, or is he going to want to probably go and be a starter? Because, again, you know, you still look at the idea that John Ursua, they'd like to get on the field, but they can't get him on the field when you have, you know, a slot receiver as good as they have in Tyler Lockett. And so, you know, I don't know if that's the right fit. I guess it's something to look at, and it has to be at the right price. I'm sure that that $8 million will come down into the $3 and $4 million range if he goes someplace. But also, I mean, he might want to go someplace to start, because say what you want, I mean, he would be coming here as a third, not necessarily the starter.
Yeah, and, you know, who knows what those guys could look like in a Seahawk uniform. It'd be eye-opening if either one of them does come back. Other guys sort of... there's a question mark whether or not they'll be back with their teams. David Johnson, the running back for the Cardinals. Steve Keim, the GM for Arizona. He was on with 98.7 Arizona Sports Radio, our sister station down there in Phoenix, and he said today that cutting David Johnson is not an option. So, John, with that sort of not being possible now, do they look to trade David Johnson, or do they look to keep him in Arizona?
Well, they'll probably look to trade him. I mean, I think that's a very definite possibility, because it just but the problem is they're going to have to pay a whole bunch of money to the team that would take him, because he's making $13 million a year. And the reason they can't cut him, I think he has a $10.2 million guarantee on his base salary. So it's like, okay, you can cut him, but you're going to have to pay $10.2 million to him anyways. And so it's probably not wise to cut him at this stage. So look at that as one where it's like, okay, they're kind of stuck with the contract, but you know, do they really want him on the team? You know, because they have to see if they can get Drake done, because Drake is the free agent that did so well in that offense. And I know that the owner, Michael Bidwell, was praising the work of Steve Keim, the general manager, particularly, you know, getting the rookie of the year in Kyler Murray, and really kind of changing the face of the franchise. And they're going to be very aggressive in free agency. So, yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, they're in a tough spot right there. And that's one of the problems. If you grossly overpay a guy, or if you pay him what he's supposed to get and then you kind of move in a different direction, you're kind of hamstrung by that. And so they'll have to wait maybe to even next year to cut them, because normally you're going to have the first 2 years where they're going to have the guarantees, and that third year, which is not being funded, it's going to go.
Yeah, David Johnson, his career has been such an interesting one in the NFL, where he came from a small school, wasn't necessarily a high draft pick, and then all of a sudden bursts onto the scene and is an absolute stud running back for a couple of years. He gets the injury to his wrist, right? And then all of a sudden is just a complete non-factor after that. You don't normally see wrist injuries being a big detriment to a running back's career, but was that the thing that really derailed any sort of potential at stardom for David Johnson?
No, it's the style of offense, because you know, he's more of a power runner, and that worked for him, but this is not a power running team. You know, so now it's an air raid offense, and they run a different way, and he just didn't seem to fit in to the way that they run. And so because of that, now, you know, he loses playing time, he loses his starting job, even though he's making $13 million. And, you know, that's the problem with running backs right now. If you change the style, and the running back may not fit. And right now, he doesn't seem to be a fit in that offense. I mean, certainly the injuries for a couple of years did hold him back, but I mean, he's basically lost the job because the offense has gone in a different direction.
Also, another guy who's out there in free agency right now, and we've sort of brought him up a couple of times, at least during text questions, people curious about whether he'll return to the NFL. Dez Bryant, who has been kind of outspoken about wanting to return to the Cowboys when, you know, he left under such bad circumstances, you know, in a huff. Do you think Dez Bryant is back in the NFL first off in 2020, and do you think there is a possibility of a reunion with him and the Cowboys?
I don't think there's any chance of a reunion with the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, I think he left, and I think that, you know, one of the reasons that he left is that he lost all his speed. And so he didn't seem to be a fit. And of course, it was one where they kind of drove him crazy with some of the stuff that he did. I remember being on the sidelines and watching him just blow up because he wasn't getting the football. And so I think they tired of that. But I still think he can get back in the league. Now, the question is, you know, where is he physically? Because, I think he'll be able to sign with somebody. It's going to have to be a cheap deal. But I think in the end that, he's... he's burned the bridge in Dallas, but I think he can still get on someplace. But now the question is going to be, does he have enough left to be able to continue playing and doing well? I mean, you can go there to a new team, but you also can get cut.
Yeah, because he's missed the last two seasons. He signed with the Saints, but then tore his Achilles gearing up for his first game with New Orleans back in 2018, and then this last year was without a team. So he hasn't played since 2017. You know, wide receivers, John, they, you know, once they get past 30, it's kind of like running backs where they see their production slip off, and he's on that other end of 30. And, I mean, even when he was healthy, his numbers started to take a dip there with Dallas. So I don't know what to expect from Dez Bryant if he does return to the NFL, but like you said, I can't see it happening with the Dallas Cowboys.
Not there. I can definitely not see that happen. All right, when we come back, we're going to have we had the pleasure of talking to Steve Hutchinson on Schooled with a Professor. So we're going to be a little bit of a preview of that on what's on the podcast, Schooled with a Professor. Steve Hutchinson, Hall of Famer, will be coming up next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.